Welcome to the Missing Chapter podcast, where you will hear some of the least known, obscure, and entertaining stories the history textbooks left out, starring Phil Horander and Phil Schauff.
Listeners, welcome to The Missing Chapter. If you're familiar with our podcast at all, you know we just introduced a new segment, The Missing Chapter Profile. And on today's episode of The Missing Chapter, we're highlighting an individual I'm almost certain you've never heard of. A brilliant individual that takes science to a level that boggles the mind. His knowledge depth went so deep that our own present-day military uses his ideas to go even deeper than we could ever imagine, hypothetically and in the most literal sense. Because this gentleman invented something that will allow our Navy to hide in the depths of the ocean floor and navigate the seas undetected. Who was he, and what did he invent? Stick with us and find out. Welcome to The Missing Chapter, everyone. Let's get started.
Welcome back to the Missing Chapter podcast. You're here with Phil Horander and Phil Schauff. Phil, we are enjoying Nally Coffee. That's N-A-L-L-Y, their adventure blend this morning, which they described on their package with three simple words. It's sweet, it's mellow, it's caramel. And it is really good. We've enjoyed it this morning. They're out of Glenville, New York, which isn't too far from us. And admittedly, Phil, as we move into spring, we're having a nice cup of coffee, we're talking history, it got me thinking about books. I don't get to read, you know, for leisure a lot during the school year because we're obviously, you know, pretty swamped with work. But, you know, as you get into the summer months, I love hearing recommendations, and maybe our listeners can provide some either via social media or if you'd like to reach out through email, themissingchapterpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know a good book or two. And maybe we'll mention you on the air, and maybe we'll end up doing, you know, reading that book and possibly doing a story down the line. Our local baker slash business teacher, Tracy Evans, she's a good one. She always comes to us with great books. And she had recommended The German Wife, a book by Kelly Rimmer, which is historical fiction. And I believe we did an episode on that.
We did, yeah.
And, yeah, so that's the sort of thing I'm looking for.
Speaking of Tracy, she just delivered a historic cookie. And someone's like, what do you mean by that? Does it mean old? No. It's a cowboy cookie, and I you know more about this than I do because she was the one that told you it was whose cookie was it?
She introduced us to the cowboy cookie a couple years ago, right? And she said something that the first wives
was it went, H.W.
H. No, it, actually, it was George W.'s wife, Laura, provided the recipe for the cowboy cookie, which it makes sense,
right?
He's got the the Texas cowboy sort of image. It is phenomenal.
Unbelievable.
It's kind of a combination of an oatmeal cookie with chocolate chip.
Yeah.
But it's really, really good. Maybe we'll post that on social media.
There you go.
If she's okay with that.
And it's so good because it's not too sweet, but it's just sweet enough. And then you dunk it in the coffee, forget about it.
No, she came in this morning, she had her Tupperware, she opened it up, and there was just a pile of cowboy cookies, which is our favorite.
Yeah. So I'm going to sneak into the factory room and take some more. And stock up.
Yeah.
You know? Hey, and before we get started with today's episode, I want to make sure and mention this too, because a few days from now, March 28th is a big day in our family. We have my Uncle Paul's birthday, my sister Karen's birthday, and my daughter Mila, and she's turning 5. So,
big, that's hard to believe.
Yeah. Big birthday coming up for March 28th. So happy birthday to Uncle Paul, happy birthday to Karen, and happy birthday to Mila. Love you guys so much. So Phil, today's episode, I actually just stumbled upon this less than 24 hours ago. So this is the most, I should say, the least prepared I've been as far as the episode. But it was one of those things where as I'm reading, I'm like, I got to do an episode on this guy. Just something I saw on TV. It was very typical for a Missing Chapter fashion is you find some information, you go down the rabbit hole, and you're stumbled upon like all sorts of new stuff. So here we are. But before I give the sources of our information today, I'm going to describe the person first, because the name of the source that I got a lot of this information from is probably going to give away what this person did and what this person is. So
now, Phil, before you get into the meat of this, would you consider this a Missing Chapter profile?
I sure as heck will.
Okay.
Yep.
Which I love. This has really been one of the fun new introduction, you know, ideas that we had for 2024. So I'm anxious to hear it.
Yeah. So to keep the suspense, I'm just going to, without giving our sources away. So this guy, he was born, I'm going to butcher his name at the very beginning here. I'm sorry. But Chaim Gedalia Rickover. But he's today known as Hyman Rickover. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's from Poland, which was then part of the Russian Empire. He travels to the United States with his family at a pretty young age as part of a huge wave of Jewish refugees, which are fleeing Russian pogroms during the Revolution of 1905. Now, we had this conversation with our classes the other day, Phil. You mentioned this is very similar to Albert Einstein.
Okay.
You know, if Albert Einstein was, you know, being Jewish and he fled, if he was not, you know, one of the successful ones to flee, how different our science world, our world altogether, and the implications of World War II and how that would play out because of his ideas in science and the nuclear program and all that stuff and the Manhattan Project, how different the world would look without Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
How different the outcome of, you know, World War II, how different the outcome of essentially our modern day warfare would be without this guy, Hyman Rickover. So after initially settling in New York City, the Rickover family moves to Chicago, where his father works as a tailor. So at 9 years old, he gets his first paid job. During high school, he worked full-time, and he was delivering Western Union telegrams. But this is just to get by, just to help the family. It's not his passion. Incredibly, incredibly bright individual, especially when it comes to science. We'll get to that in just a second. So Rickover seeks an appointment to the U.S. Naval Academy after high school because his parents couldn't afford college, which is kind of common at the time. But thank God his parents couldn't afford college. Now, why would I ever say that? This sounds kind of rude or inconsiderate. It's because this kind of diverts him going away from college but going into the military, which is going to change the scope of history altogether. Mm-hmm. So Rickover graduates in 1922 at the top quarter of his class. And then joins the crew of a warship. And within a year, he was made an engineer officer, which was the youngest in the squadron, which is a testament to how talented he was in the science field. He served on board a battleship before returning to school, but after a year at the Naval Postgraduate School and some time at Columbia University, he receives his MS in electrical engineering. So Rickover volunteers for submarine duty, serves on two subs from 1929 to 33. He was then assigned to duty on a battleship and assumed ship command of a minesweeper in 1937. Now, taking a look at the scope of history here, the 1930s, good Lord, right?
Right.
Talking global impacts here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially being on a submarine.
Mm-hmm.
So this post in this ship command as a minesweeper ends after a few months. Rickover becomes an engineering duty officer in 1937. Now, he becomes assistant chief of the electrical section of the Bureau of Engineering in 1939, and during the war, he served as the head of the electrical section of the Bureau of Ships. So he is really building his resume. If we fast forward a little bit, in 1946, he travels to Oak Ridge as part of a project to develop, here we go, a nuclear electric generating plant. There, Hyman Rickover becomes convinced that nuclear-powered ships is the future of modern-day warfare. All right, so 1946 is this idea that he has this epiphany, essentially. So the future of the Navy being nuclear-powered is not shared by his supervisors, and he was reassigned to Washington, D.C. Now, even though it wasn't shared by his supervisors and, you know, he shipped off, it doesn't stop him. He actually brings up this idea directly with the very famous Chester Nimitz, who at that point was the chief of naval operations. Now, for those of you that maybe don't recognize that name, Roosevelt promotes this guy to commander-in-chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet in World War II. So, pretty prolific individual here. So he meets with him directly. But with his support and that of the Secretary of the Navy, the Nuclear Power Division was established in the Bureau of Ships under Rickover's direction. So he as great of a scientist he was, probably a pretty good convincing argument. Maybe has a little bit of lawyer in them because he really convinces some of the top people in the Navy to support his vision for nuclear-powered submarines. So Rickover and Elvin M. Weinberg, which was the director of research at Oak Ridge, began work on the new pressurized water reactor for the submarine. In 1949, Rickover became the director of the Nuclear Power Division, Bureau of Ships, and was appointed chief of the Naval Reactor Branch, Reactor Development Division, in the Atomic Energy Commission. Said that all without stuttering.
That was really good.
That was a tough one. But yeah, huge title. But these two roles allowed Rickover a pretty large degree of control over lots of development of the nuclear-powered submarine, and also in overseeing the development of the first full-scale commercial nuclear power plant dedicated just to peacetime operations. Mm-hmm. So he's overarching, you know, kind of cross-curricular operations for this newfound nuclear-generated electricity. So in these roles, because he's had so many titles, Rickover was often forced to send letters to himself to request certain things. So Congress authorized the construction of the nuclear-powered submarine called the Nautilus, and it's hard to believe, 1951 is this first ship that's being propelled by nuclear power. It's pretty unbelievable. The ship was propelled by the submarine thermal reactor, which is a pressurized water reactor built by the Westinghouse Corporation, and the submarine was christened in 1954 by Mamie Eisenhower. And traveled out to sea for the first time in 1955. So the submarine would go on to break many records, as its nuclear reactor allows it to travel huge distances and to stay underwater much longer than other submarines who would have to come to the surface to, you know, get the necessary oxygen to continue to power the sub. So Rickover continues to head the Navy's efforts into building a nuclear-powered arsenal. He interviewed every prospective officer considered for a post on a nuclear ship, tens of thousands of interviews. And what these highlight is his unorthodox style and very, very stringent standards. And he's not necessarily very well liked by other Navy officials. He's really largely responsible for the lack of any reactor accidents in the United States Navy. So he has a standard that a lot of other people may not have.
Was it just the manner in which he did his work that turned people off?
Well, I think, yeah, I think that's part of it.
You know what I mean? He was kind of, he would go rogue if necessary. He didn't work within the system, which if you're in the military, that's kind of...
I think that's part of it.
It's frowned upon if you don't, right?
I'm going to give you some examples after the break of how his interview style was very, very eccentric and unorthodox, to say the least. Rickover, not generally liked, but he was passed over twice. I think maybe because he's not generally liked for promotion to admiral, but strong support in the government led to his continued service and his eventual admiral appointment later on in his career. But he was finally forced to retire in 1982 after 63 years of service. So in total, Rickover served longer than any other naval officer in history, became the first person to receive two congressional gold medals. The USS Hyman G. Rickover submarine was commissioned in 1984, one of the few ships to be named after a living person. Now, he ends up passing away in Arlington, Virginia on July 8th, 1986, at the age of 86, and he's buried in Arlington National Cemetery. So this guy is the father of the, I mean, we consider, you know, kind of commonplace, but for that time, brand new nuclear-powered submarine, which is going to change the face of our Navy and submarine warfare altogether for the rest of history.
Welcome back to the Missing Chapter Podcast. You're here with Phil Horinder and Phil Shaw. Phil, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head with that last sentence. I mean, the idea of having a nuclear reactor safely on a submarine, on a large aircraft carrier, it will transform the face of naval warfare for history.
Right.
And you're thinking in the context of, I mean, right at the beginning of the Cold War.
Yeah.
But the idea of being able to harness such powerful, conceivably dangerous power safely for this manner, it really is amazing.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where you look back at some of the successes of certain people and they have really, really high standards. So sometimes it comes across as not being well-liked. Like I think as we've seen throughout sports history, some people weren't too fond of Michael Jordan when they were dealing with Michael Jordan because he had such a high standard. He would call you out. Certain, you know, I think of Kobe Bryant sometimes. He rubbed people the wrong way. because we always use, you know, sports analogies.
Right. But it's how many people actually buck the trend and are embraced?
I mean, that's true.
It's not the norm. It's usually, no, those people have the additional obstacles that they have to kind of fight over. And then the luxury of, you know, being able to look back on history and say it's fortunate that they did because, you know, their contributions were groundbreaking.
Groundbreaking and the danger involved in this.
Right.
You almost have to have the Rickover mindset, mm-hmm. you know. And speaking of that, I do want to mention certain tales of this because to give you a full perspective of how he was as a person and how he interacted with people and his superiors and his inferiors, it all goes together. So I told you at the very beginning of the episode that I wasn't going to mention the website where all this is from, but the website is fascinating. It's called usrickover.org, and it has letters from soldiers that were, you know, underneath him and people that have interacted with him. Mm-hmm. I think some of the stories, there's one story, and I'm not going to do it justice, so if anyone who's listening wants to know more, go to usrickover.org. There's a story of a soldier who is some award was happening. I can't remember exactly what it was, but some award was taking place, and they were like, hey, I think General or Admiral Rickover is going to be here today. And everyone was waiting outside. A limo pulls up. And as soon as the door opens, people were shocked. There was not a cloud in the sky, okay? As soon as the limo, and they're all like, oh, this has got to be the Admiral. As soon as the limo door opens, they said it wasn't just a little bit of rain. It was an absolute torrential downpour. Like the sun was blocked mm-hmm. out. And all these Navy soldiers and seamen were dressed in white, being soaked, right? So he gets an umbrella for he and his wife. He comes out. They're presenting some sort of award. As soon as the presentation ends and he's getting back into the limo, the rain stops immediately, to the point where everyone in attendance were like, wait, did everyone just see that?
Right.
So it was kind of one of those things where a lot of guys were like, you know, he had this superlativeness
right.
about him. Kind of the feeling you get when you're around some celebrity. You're like, oh my God, that's so-and-so. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he had that kind of power. But then to experience that firsthand, I think it must have been pretty interesting. I think there's another one that I'm actually going to read just to give you an example of how he was. There were directly from this website, ussrickover.org. I think earlier I might have mentioned it was US Rickover. It's actually ussrickover.org. It says, several different renditions of the Make Me Mad story have been circulating. Apparently, this is a pretty common thing for Admiral Hyman Rickover. He dared a midshipman to do something that would anger him, purportedly to see how willing the midshipman would be to follow an order. Some midshipmen were said to have complied by clearing the admiral's desk with a single-arm sweep. Others reportedly destroyed a valued submarine model by throwing it out the window.
Oh boy.
Just to see if he would actually take orders. Then there were various, quote, confinement tales of being locked up in a small space or a tiny closet for hours. This apparently was one of the Admiral's famous tests for claustrophobia to see if the midshipman had what it would take to become a submarine officer. So as you can tell, this is pretty eccentric for the most part. I got to give you this story too, a little background here. Another story of his eccentric style of leading people, right? So directly from this ussrickover.org, it says, the only anecdote I heard from our current round of interludes had supposedly involved a classmate of mine just a few hours earlier. As the breathless rumor went, the admiral had been berating him for a particularly poor performance in a certain course of study. Quote, what would your mother think if she knew you were goofing off like this? The admiral had supposedly asked my classmate, who reportedly replied, my mother's dead.
Oh.
The admiral's alleged response, well, it's a good thing she is, or she would die of embarrassment. Oh. So maybe if you weren't part of the camp that says, I don't know why they wouldn't like this guy, maybe that response right there might have flipped
that
the point.
That kind of summarizes a lot of what you've just said.
Yeah.
Into one quote.
Correct, yeah. Correct. So the father of the nuclear Navy, Admiral Rickover, did have a couple of questionable interactions with some people, but the ships and submarines for which he was responsible were powered by nuclear reactors, were often armed with nuclear missiles. So he knew that the first accident with one of these vessels would probably be the last accident. Therefore, he had no tolerance for mistakes of any kind. The very stringent standards that he had and imposed regarding both nuclear safety and personnel selection, been a pretty critical factor, actually, in the Navy's continuing record of zero reactor accidents. And they want to keep it that way, obviously. So the following quote summarizes, I think, his management philosophy. A principle for managing a successful program is to resist the natural human inclination to hope things will work out, despite evidence or doubt to the contrary. It is not easy to admit that what you thought was correct did not turn out that way. If conditions require it, one must face the facts and brutally make needed changes despite considerable costs and schedule delays. So I think this is pretty cool, Phil, that Rickover used the following seven rules for success. Number one, practice continuous improvement. Number two, hire smart people. Three, establish quality supervision. Four, respect the dangers you face. Five, training must be constant and rigorous. Six, audit, control, and inspect. And number seven, learn from past mistakes. So each one of these items, I think, deserves a chapter or most likely a book. But to suffice it to say, there's nothing about the above 7 points that is unique to the nuclear Navy. They apply equally over the process, the energy industries. But it's really his style that continues to this day of being really, really stringent. And obviously practicing what they would want to make sure is the safest environment possible for working for something like this. Not really worried about the possibility of being controversial, as he can be seen, quote, examining the second of the above rules. He said, theories of management don't much matter. Endeavor, succeed, or fail because of the people involved. Only by attracting the best people will you accomplish these great deeds. This way of thinking would seem to conflict with the fifth rule, the necessity of training, training, and training, but his point was that there is no point in training people who are fundamentally incompetent. These people need to be removed from the organization. So pretty strict, pretty stringent, but obviously the father of what we would consider our modern Navy.
Right. He got results, Phil.
He did.
You know, I don't think a lot of this would have been accepted, but he produced.
And it was someone, once again, missing chapter profile style, someone I had not known prior to researching him. Thank you for joining us, and until next time,
I'm Phil Horinder,
and I'm Phil Schaff. Another chapter has been added to the history textbooks.